Number three, the director's report. Mr. Director, it's yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I have a few items, and then I'm going to call on a couple staff to help fill out a couple of important items. But first, I want to maybe provide a recap on my recent visit to Washington, D.C. We were able to meet with, looks like almost nine of the congressionals, and we also met with the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies and the Army Corps of Engineers when we were back there. Kind of the same, or the general themes that we talked, first and foremost, we wanted to discuss with people House Bill 5650, which is the bill that's resulting from the Blue Ribbon Panel, which the chairman mentioned, and it's, I think the title is something along the lines of Sustaining America's Wildlife or something at this point. But what it amounts to is this Blue Ribbon Panel led by Johnny Morris of Bass Pro Shop. He owns Bass Pro Shop, and he also now owns Cabela's, along with ex-Governor Dave Friedenthal from Wyoming, and a whole laundry list of corporate and conservation leaders put together a panel and trying to look for a solution on the scale of Pittman Roberts and Dingell Johnson to work on funding species of greatest conservation need. So it's the gap that we currently have in this country where we're unable to fund animals that aren't normally hunted and fished. And so they've come up with an idea to use oil and gas revenue, part of those funds, the, what do we call it?
Surcharge tax.
Yeah, the surcharge taxes to put aside $1.3 billion annually to help fund these kind of efforts across the state. This would mean about $26 million for the state of Washington. It would be made available on the same ratio match as Pittman Roberts and Dingell Johnson. And it's just something very exciting that we would love to see passed. You all, if you've been around a while, have heard about the CARA or the Teaming with Wildlife efforts in the past. We're an excise tax model on binoculars and hiking, that kind of gear. This is a little bit different tact. This funding source is the same source where the land and water conservation funds come from. This is, does not replace them. It's in addition to those funds. So anyway, we're excited and looking. Currently, we're looking for sponsors, legislative sponsors, and we were talking to, because Washington has a delegation that represents both Republican and Democrats in Congress. We're looking for supporters in both.
I'm just wondering what kind of reception you got. I think, isn't our senator on the Natural Resources Committee? So she would be, yes, Cantwell.
All of the congressionals were extremely interested in this effort. Some knew more than others. Del Benny is currently a sponsor, and we were looking for a Republican sponsor. And I've got some really good reception. It's got real strong bipartisan support, and I think this may be some legislation that we'll be able to move. So I'm pretty excited about it. It would mean big things for Washington. And all of this also leads to a bit where we're at in Washington Wild Future efforts. Of course, we put together our package. We're starting to shop that up here in our state legislature. Lots of balls in the air right now. People we're getting a lot of support, but we're also having some people hold support because they'd like to see a few things done on the sports side. So over the next few months, it's going to be very dynamic, and we'll see how that goes. But one thing we've heard in all of our visits around the state was sportsmen would like to see more wildlife watchers and other people have an opportunity to help fund the department. And I think we all understand that over the long haul, maybe not so much with fishing. I think fishing numbers are continuing to increase at a slow rate. But hunters and sportsmen, the numbers are generally pretty flat. And that probably the model we have right now, just from a financial standpoint, won't sustain us into the future without broadening our funding basis. So We've tapped into our sportsmen. Probably, I think we're getting close to the maximum. I'm hearing that right now. I think that we all pay for recreation, and we all have that in our budgets. At some point, you have to start making choices, and we want people to continue to choose hunting, fishing, and outdoor wildlife watching as their main form of recreation. And so I think we have to watch how far we push that current model and look for these other funding sources. The chairman mentioned the Wildlife Leaders Forum. That's our start on looking for a Washington source for the match to these funds. And so that's part of our Wild Future process in the next biennia. This time we're working on sportsmen, our tried and true friends. And next time we're going to look on a way to broaden on the non-consumptive side. That was a very good week. I enjoyed that meeting thoroughly. And I think we're going to have we're encouraging the group to stick together and look for some ways that we can fund in Washington. So that would be about an $8 million match we'd need to come up with to leverage that 26. We also, the congressionals were, several were interested in North of Falcon and how that went last year and what we're doing this year to maybe do things a bit differently to engage people earlier and to try to separate the permitting process from the fishing management process. Gave them updates on that. Several were interested in wolves and our control action from this fall. We discussed that. We are generating a report right now on that control action. I think Donnie's working on it. It should come out soon. We're also working on our population estimates for this year. That usually comes out in January sometime or February. And Donnie and I have also talked about this white paper and trying to update our information that's out there in the literature on livestock depredations or controlling livestock depredations. So we were thinking more in line of a white paper. There have been panels in the past. I don't know what the best way to deliver that information is. I'd like to have stuff written down so we can share it with folks. And so that's kind of where the way I'm leaning on that. But Donnie's aware of that and getting ready to start working on it. I don't know about the timeline, but certainly some of the stuff, it shouldn't be a huge workload to assemble what's in the published literature out there right now. So, let's see. Several congressionals wanted an update on grizzly bears. In the North Cascade reintroductions, the draft environmental impact statement will be coming out sometime this spring. I've heard there's a variety of options in there. Of course, we all know that Washington has a state law that does not allow reintroductions from out of the state. We currently don't have enough a source for grizzly bears within the state. So that makes things a little bit interesting. Part of that law, too, is we will stay involved and be a part of the process, and that's where we're at right now. I'm currently chair of the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, and I'm going to a meeting next week in Missoula, and I'll hear more about grizzly bears. But there are some interesting times right now on the Yellowstone ecosystem and the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. Those populations have met all recovery requirements as far as numbers, but they've been stalled up on the delisting process for several years. So it'll be interesting to see over the next few years how that goes. Certainly some of the states involved with those populations are anxious to see a delisting go through. We also briefed congressionals on our Mitchell Act issues and our third-party lawsuit, the Columbia River hatchery, Mitchell Act hatchery issues, and how that impacts our fisheries along the coast and how it may impact Pacific Salmon Commission negotiations on the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And so we had some good discussions with several of the commissioners on that, and I think we'll have more on that later today. or I mean, on at our meeting here, probably. Let's see. One thing that we talked, we wanted to talk about, we wanted to start thinking about what kind of opportunities there will be with a change, and we've heard the President-elect Trump talk about maybe some efforts on infrastructure. If those kinds of programs and or if that should occur in a big way, I think Washington stands ready. I know the department's ready to provide shovel-ready projects on the Fish Passage side. I've been describing our culvert issues here in Washington as a, you know, it's a major expense. It's really difficult for small communities and counties to fund repair of those kind of passage issues. It's almost a Superfund scale problem in this state. I don't know if you've seen the maps recently, but if you put a red dot on all the fish blockage or problems in this state, the state's pretty darn red with dots. And so I'm hoping that if there is infrastructure legislation in the future, that we could be ready to try to get on board with the right kinds of bridges and culverts that we could take advantage of that. And that seemed to resonate well with lots of congressionals. I think people are really anxious and wondering what's going to happen and what the new administration will look like. But people are looking for opportunities. And so we stand ready to be available with some good ideas. So those were the main topics back there. I have a couple of staff that I'd like. We have some real important things coming, occurring. Peter, would you come up and talk about, Peter's going to talk about our new licensed vendor and give you an update on that. That's happening here in a couple of weeks. We're all holding our breath and keeping our fingers crossed, and Peter's going to show us how that's going to go.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. My name is Peter Verney. I'm the Licensing Divisional Manager for the agency. And I'm going to update you today on the status of replacing the Washington Interactive Licensing Database, which we partner with about 580 dealers across the state. We sell 2.5 million licensed products out of, and we generate $55 million annually. WFDFW has been working with a company called JMT. It's a technical and engineering firm out of Baltimore, Maryland, to develop a state-of-the-art licensing system that is faster, easier to use for our customers, and more secure than our current system. The Wild Replacement Project is divided into three phases, with the first phase being released next week, which will represent the bulk of our current functionality and our current system. Phase two will be completed sometime this winter, and that will develop aspects that are unique to DFW's licensing, such as nuances around our special hunt modules. Phase three is around value-added features that the agency has wanted for years, such as the ability to sell commercial licenses within the system, a mobile application, and enhanced enforcement abilities for the field staff out, enforcement field staff. To provide you some background on this project, the department issued a request for a proposal back in 2011 to build a new licensing system. A lot of work was done to inventory requirements, business rules, and a contract was rewarded, and a lot of work was done. Unfortunately, in 2013, that contract was dissolved, and our contract with our current vendor, Active Networks, was nearing expiration. So back in November 2015, I directed my team to get back to doing a core assessment of our current system, and along with the previous RFP, started work on a new RFP that we were hoping to build out a system that would take us 18 to 24 months. On April 1st, Deputy Director Storr received a phone call from our vendor, Active Networks, telling him that by the end of the year, our system would severely degrade the security around a certificate that was in the system that we didn't have the memory capacity to upgrade. Active told Joe that we would, DFW would need to buy new equipment, and to allow Active to recoup their costs would increase our transaction fee and require us to sign a three-year contract with them. Because of the work we were doing, we proposed that we could get an RFP on the street, we could interview vendors, select a vendor, and have a signed contract to begin work in a short period of time. In our selection process, we had 10 panel members that all agreed that JMT was the right vendor to partner with to build a new system, despite the timeline being the most aggressive any vendor in the industry has been asked to attempt. We signed a contract with JMT on June 9th and began work. Fast forwarding through a ton of work associated with data migration and building a replacement system, this week we have completed and training of all internal staff members and regional offices, and we will begin dealer training next week. Plans are in place for a cutover to the new JMT system to begin around 6 p.m. on Saturday, December 17th, with an anticipated go-live date of sometime early morning, December 19th. This will allow us to be able to, we won't be able to sell licenses on the evening of the 17th and all day December 18th. We will be getting out messages to customers to buy their licenses in advance for any activities they may want to do on that weekend. There are still some very popular activities like crabbing and waterfowl hunting that occur during this month of December that provide great table fare for the holiday seasons. And we want to get a word out to avoid any impact to our customers. In addition, we heard from the fish program that the previously anticipated razor clam dig that was scheduled for that weekend will not happen. So that's we won't have to worry about coastal towns and getting out some kind of way for customers to pick up a one-day license. Work has already begun on phase two with my business analysts, and JMT has already started development. Phase three, initial fact-finding and information gathering, has begun with our business analysts. In our contract with JMT, we now have 3,000 development hours each year compared to the 1,000 development hours we had with Active Networks. This is a very important addition to our contract. This will allow the agency to partner with a company that understands the importance of continued functionality and also building out the new features we want. Finally, this has been a very positive experience for the licensing division as we have worked across the agency and state government with assistance from the director's office, public affairs, IT, wildlife, fish, and enforcement programs, as well as we have partnered with agencies such as the Department of Enterprise Services, WATEC, Office of Cybersecurity, and our independent quality assurance consultant, Dave Pratt, to ensure everybody's needs are being heard and that our new system meets all the needs of our customers and our dealer partners. A lot of great work has been done and is being done currently by many folks, especially within the licensing division. I feel very good about the position we currently find ourselves in, and I'm excited for the rollout next weekend. Once that work's completed, it's time to dig into phase two, and then phase three, we'll start work on getting a lot of the enhancements that a lot of the programs and we have wanted for many years. I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I'm really proud of the staff down in licensing. They've done a yeoman's work down there putting this together. We're all keeping our fingers crossed for a seamless transition, and it's been a heck of a lot of work, and really thank you, please, Peter, to all staff. Ron wanted to come up and give us a brief update on the point, no point, and I think Kelly, too, on... I can't remember what you said, Kelly. Okay.
Yeah, Director Hensworth, I'm going to visit a little bit about the Steelhead license plate and give you all an update. So continue to have a lot of excitement from the public and the media around this opportunity for folks. I probably take about 2 phone calls or emails a week from the media and multiple calls from the public, and they all have the same 2 questions. When's it going to be available, and how much does it cost? But before we get to that, there was some initial, I know back, I think it was in August, we presented you with 2 designs. We talked later on, I believe it was in September, about the fact that one of the designs didn't pass the DOL licensing requirements in time for it to be considered for this year's design. What we heard from DOL is we do have the opportunity over time to change designs, so that's pretty exciting, and we think it will help us keep the revenue up and steady and hopefully moving in the right direction. But with regard to the timing, the law goes into effect January 1st, and the license plates will be available to the public on January 3rd, so folks can start purchasing them at that time. I've got my application in, so I'm pretty excited about it. The cost of the plates, $72.75 for a regular plate with numbers on it. If you want to personalize that license plate, it's $124.75. So get your license plates and help us support Steelhead Recovery. Any questions?
Yeah, some of us, when this was going around, we signed, if we wanted one, we signed our name down. Does that...
Yeah, you should receive. So I think you're talking about. So the law allows the director to designate the first 25 numerical license plates. So those folks should receive a letter from DOL. You still get to pay for them.
Oh yeah. So I'm waiting for my letter, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's okay.
I'll rattle a licensing's cage, and we'll see what the status is of those letters. So, any other questions?
Thanks, Kelly. Chairman Smith, directors, commissioners, I just wanted to give a quick update. Had a discussion last night at Fish Committee meeting on the Point No Point boat launch, and I wanted to give an update on the status of that. Tammy, thanks for handing out the work plans that the Fish Program has been working on and following. Same work plan. If you flip it to the back, you'll see some strike-throughs. And I'll walk through some of the sticking points that we've had in continuing the project. I've met with the Suquamish tribe twice, numerous phone calls and emails, but face-to-face twice. So I'm not sure how much detail the commission has had in the past, but one of the things that is occurring around Puget Sound is that when individuals or entities are putting structures out over the water, the tribes believe that that's and it prohibits their ability to engage within their UNA, it's a devaluing of their treaty right. And so they are looking for, from many entities, compensation for that devalued portion of their treaty right. No different from this boat launch as it sticks out over crabbing areas that they have fished and is within UNA, usual and custom areas and stations of the tribes. And we have always had that as a sticking point. What I've been working on is to try to assess if there was a way that we could partner with them on projects that have a benefit to state constituents as well as tribal constituents, and in that manner, their multiple rearing facilities. And if we could, for a short period of time, partner in paying for some of the fish food for that or marking of the fish for those net pens. And so we continue to work on that issue. It seems like that may be promising, but again, I just wanted to brief you on that. All of the remainder of the issues that we have remain on hold. I know that Tim Burns from our Capital Asset Management Program is watching money, and as well as the permit, and we meet frequently on that just to make sure that everything's still in line, but continue the discussions with Suquamish. I also had a meeting with Port Gamble. One of the issues that they believe we need to, they had issues to resolve. The final outcome is that we would put some informational signage up at Point No Point Boat Launch that recognizes the cultural value of the area for the tribes. And they would then support the boat launch. So still working the issue. It's taking longer than we had anticipated, but I'll be back hopefully to do the Snoopy dance soon to tell you we're done.
And that's a sight I want to see. Commissioner Keogh.
Well, I'll defer to Commissioner
Mayberry. Yeah, thank you, Ron. A couple of questions.
What's the amount that we're talking about here in terms of supporting their fishery and their hatchery programs? And I'm assuming it's the net pen program that that would benefit from this. What would the benefits be to our own fishers in those areas, if you would just address that briefly?
Yeah, and thank you, Commissioner Mankin. I don't have the specifics on that, but so the Suquamish tribe has multiple net pen sites. They also fund the Elliott Bay net pens, Muckleshoots. The Muckleshoot tribe, I believe, pays for the freshwater rearing of coho or portions of the coho that end up going to the Elliott Bay pens. And Suquamish pays for the saltwater rearing portion of that as well as feeding the fish. They also have another net pen, and right now that the name of that escapes me, and what we're doing is looking at the overall benefit. We know we have marine area recreational fishers that benefit from those. To what extent, I'm not sure, but we're just looking at trying to partner with that. They, the Suquamish tribe, have never mentioned a dollar amount in our discussions. They've always just said we need compensation for the lost ability to fish within our UNA.
So have they agreed, has the Suquamish tribe agreed that this is a mitigation effort that they would accept at this point?
We are still exchanging total values of fish food that they feed on a year and trying to get to a proposal that they will take to their council. The council has not heard it, therefore no, the tribe has not agreed that that's an appropriate step for mitigation. But the individual is Rob Purser, the individual I've been working with, is optimistic that if we can get a package together that the council would likely hear it and possibly give support.
And so what's holding up action on this at this point then?
Me receiving additional, they have additional production costs that I haven't yet received, so I can work with the director's office to put a package together to give back to them.
And do we have a timeline on this?
I hope it happens this month, Commissioner, but I'm not positive. I do have a call into Rob. I call him almost every other week and email him on the weeks that I don't talk to him. So it's just a matter of getting the information from Suquamish so we've got all their information so we can provide a proposal to them that for their consideration.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron, for the update. I recall with respect to the issues that Point No Point, Port Gamble tribe had, and I remember I myself spoke with tribal representatives. As is often the case in our relationships and working through issues with the tribe, sometimes they get complicated with other issues that aren't particularly related. This is an issue that came up in connection with the boat launch, and that is Point No Point's dissatisfaction with the state's dealings with other tribes on hunting issues. And I don't know if that issue has been resolved or is that still kind of in the background. And I do recall that they sent a letter as well. I remember seeing the letter, and maybe you could address that. And then I have one more question after that. Thanks.
So thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. The tribal hunting issue relative to the connections to Point No Point seem to have been separated. I'm not hearing any hang-ups between hunting issues and the Point No Point boat launch tribes at this time.
Okay, well, that's good news. And, you know, this has been going on, and Commissioner Mankin knows better than I do, but this issue has been, you know, kind of going on forever and, well, not forever, but for a long time. And I know the state has tried hard in negotiating with the tribes. As I understand it, there's basically the tribes need to sign off on the request for the Army Corps to permit the project. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. So is there at some point, does the state say, hey, we've tried? I mean, assuming we can't get agreement on this, and I'm optimistic that we can, but assuming that we can't, and the state can demonstrate, WDFW can demonstrate that they've gone, you know, they've done everything they can to reach agreement. Is there at some point where the state goes to the Army Corps and say, we can't get agreement, or is that just not an option?
Commissioner Kehoe, I believe that if we went to the Army Corps, they would continue to deny the permit because of the lack of support from the tribes in this particular instance. I will remind the commission that the boat launch, the upland work is done. The launch for kayaks, canoes, other hand launch vessels is being used. It's a beautiful location. So part of the project is done. I'm hoping to see the rest of it completed.
Yes. I think I heard you say that a change in our position since the last time we talked about that, which is, are we acknowledging that access by state fishers to the UNA is going to have the effect that the tribe's alleging, which is a reduction in their harvest? Because that would be a pretty bad precedent for us to set, that the presence of our fishers in a UNA has a deleterious effect on tribal harvest. That would be big. And so have we admitted that, and what evidence is there that access by state fishers to a UNA has a effect on treaty harvest?
Commissioner Walker, thank you for the clarifying question. The answer to your question is no, absolutely not. The devaluing of the treaty that we acknowledge is the actual ramp out over title lands. That's it. It's not us using the ramp or the number of people accessing for recreational boating or fishing opportunities or crabbing opportunities. It's only the structure that sits out over the title lands that they say has devalued. It's no different than the compensation that the tribes receive from the Navy to expand the wharf at Bangor. 6 acres of wharfing conducted several years ago by the Navy, and the tribes received, I believe it was $9 million for 6 acres. No different than the Elliott Bay Marina, in which the tribes are now half owners of the marina because of the expansion that the marina went through several years ago. So it's a situation that local municipalities, local owners are going through in different facets. There's no continuity, no consistency in how it's being approached or done, and we find ourselves in that same situation right now.
Okay.
Further questions?
No. Okay, thank you, Ron, for those updates.
I had a quick thing. I just had to go back as I sat here thinking about it was about the licensing, the creation of that new database, which to me is quite amazing that, you know, we in this short period of time came from, you know, total breach in our system to the rollout next week. And I had when I was in football, I was an offensive tackle. My coach used to always say, you're going to largely go unnoticed, but you're going to open up the holes that make everybody look good. And I think that's what you've done here. And I know the director really appreciates that, and I would like to say thank you. There, you know, hundreds of thousands of people going to buy their licenses are going to run through a hole that you created. It's an amazing feat, really. And I just wanted to thank you again. And if in any way we could bring some recognition to that effort, that would help us with some of the other things that don't always look so good, raises in fees or whatnot. You know, if vendors had a way to let people know, you know, look, this is an amazing thing that just happened. You're buying your license now here in a period of time that took a lot of work. So anyway, just wanted to bring that up.
We're going to put you in charge of analogies.
It just came to mind.
I like the opening the hole.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the final thing I got, I've been getting a bunch of texts from Michelle, my wife. She's indicating that the news is broadcasting that Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers is likely to be appointed Secretary of Interior. So we shall see, but that's what NBC, New York Times, and others are saying. I don't know if it's actually come out, so Washington could have a nexus there.
Washington already has a nexus there.
Yeah.
You're completed?
Yes, I am, unless there's any question.
Yeah, I wanted to go back and talk a little bit more about the Wildlife Committee's conversation this morning about the Wolf Science Panel, because I think the rest of the commission has heard about and talked about that subject, and just wanted to give you a heads up on what the Wildlife Committee discussed this morning. Science panels are always of interest to the broader public. The public wants to see us basing our policies on good science. And to define what that means is a much more difficult enterprise. And it involves those of us who have been involved in the research world know that peer review is a big part of it. There's always give and take, always criticism, never certainty. So the expectations of the public regarding what we could present to them might be different than, you know, what we can practically carry out. Staff are also a bit concerned about getting in the middle of some academic arguments, getting the commission in the middle of some real, healthy, vigorous debate among scientists, which is what is going on now in the world of wolf research. It's pretty intense. And it also is a concern that even if you have good, solid science, that is not the sole basis with which we make our decisions on policy. Many of them are inherently based in the human dimensions of issues. So one thought that I thought I wanted to bring to everybody's attention, because it's the kind of line of thinking that Donnie Martorello is taking now, is that there ought to be a venue outside of the department that involves the Western states, potentially WAFWA, in holding perhaps a wolf science conference every 2 or 3 years, drawing scientists from all the states, much like they already do with mountain lions. There's been mountain lion conferences for decades now. Every few years, a different state hosts it, brings scientists from all over the West. Public can be present. Nonprofits are often involved. So that way we stimulate, we advocate for good, healthy dialogue, but we're not saddled with the responsibility every year, and we don't have to act as some sort of referee of what is good science, because that's not a position that government typically does well in. I just wanted to, you know, bring that forward, that that's where things seem to be headed. That's what we're talking about now. Staff will be presenting some of the a digested form of what they think the science is showing us so far, maybe some of the strengths and weaknesses of the various studies that have been done. So you will be hearing that in January. But as far as a science panel that would satisfy all the interests that want us to show them what we're doing, it's difficult.
Thank you. And I just want to support what Commissioner Wecker said. And I think I was one of the ones that asked for some type of looking at another panel. And this satisfies what she suggests, satisfies everything I was thinking about. And I think we also talked this morning about how we don't want to get into the habit of saying, like, well, the science around wolf management involves the biology of wolves and the social tolerance of people. And so there's a whole bunch of different avenues of science to look at, and they're all really dealing with a tiny little slice of the whole situation. So you can't necessarily say, well, there's a paper that supports exactly the direction we should go. It's going to be, there's a paper that supports some thought processes we need to involve in this much bigger decision-making process. So creating just another science panel like we had 3 or 4 years ago, you know, was my initial thought. But I think the direction we're headed now with the suggestions she made make a lot of sense. Have staff brief commission, brief WAG on all the different science that's out there, but, you know, not necessarily go to the effort and the time and the expense to draw all the scientists into one place at this point. Look maybe to a future option where, like she suggested, it's kind of a semi-annual or something, kind of an event that we really can focus in. And then, and people want to come to that. Researchers want to come to that, present their information, and it's less on us than it is on the folks that are doing the research.
Yeah. We could host the first one.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a great suggestion. It, at WAFWA, and now I just did a quick count, there's about 8 states in the Western that have wolves, and certainly the Canadian members have always had wolves. So we could bring that up at the winter meeting and have a discussion in the director's forum about is it time to have a wolf working group in WAFWA. Yeah. Makes sense to me. So, and those are great forums. I was involved in those throughout my career, the Deer and Elk Working Group and others. So, yeah, they really are good forums.
Are you done? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good report. Thank you, Director. And we're going to